to have the person who signed the welfare bill, the person who signed the crime bill, the person who was in charge of the sanctions in Iraq. It will be painful to see him up there. But in many ways, in some respects, that is Muhammad Ali's last victory. The same presidents that used to bug his phone and harass him and subject him to COINTELPRO now have to stand over his body.
Dave Zirin and Dahlia Mugahed, I want to thank you so much for being with us. This does it for our show. They were speaking to us from Louisville. I'll be in Chicago Saturday, June 11th, Jones College Prep at 3 for the 2016 Printers Row Literary Festival. That does it for the broadcast. We have two job openings at Democracy Now! Check them out. Special thanks to Amy Littlefield and Carla Wills.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, and glad to be with you today. Along with me here in the studio is John Conroy, our WHFR News Director. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Jay. It's great to be here.
John was on a little trip visiting relatives, his son.
Yeah, visiting my new grandbaby.
That's right, out of state. So.
In Virginia, and his wife and family.
So how are the roads doing outside of Michigan?
The roads are doing real well.
Yeah, outside of Michigan.
The roads are fine, other than the traffic is absolutely crazy around the Washington, D.C. area.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, all the excitement for the upcoming presidential election. It's a busy place, of course.
It's a confluence of many highways coming into
right.
the same place.
Yep. A lot of people live there for all kinds of reasons. The center, the capital of our country.
Yes.
So exciting. Well, today is Friday, and it is in June. It is the 10th of June. How time flies, right? It was just the 9th yesterday. A lot of bad jokes here. The guest that is supposed to be here has not arrived yet. We are hoping that he's a candidate for 15th District, Michigan, representative, and he is not here at this point. So hopefully he's on his way, and we will get in his 30-minute interview, which we have allowed him to do, and it was scheduled for today. So we hope he comes, because we've got a lot of questions. Oh boy, a lot of questions to ask. Let me just start with some stories from the past, just a week or so ago. There was a meeting, and there'll be more meetings, in Dearborn Heights, and there was a meeting on June 9th, well, just yesterday. That's not so much of the past, is it? All the time flies. Yeah. Oh, anyway, Caroline Kennedy Library and Councilwoman Lisa Hicks Clayton hosted a town hall meeting because of a concern among some residents about the emergency dispatch services with Dearborn. The idea of contracting, and therefore, in fact, merging, or not really merging, but letting Dearborn dispatchers handle emergency service contacts for the city of Dearborn Heights. Mm-hmm. And there are some concerns that outsourcing is not going to be to the benefit of the city, and there will be some more issues. Questions that can be answered by further meetings. Certainly, there is not an agreement that I know of yet that is written out about that. So it's not even a firm proposal yet. But they're getting close. Obviously, the reason they might do it is that it would save money for the city of Dearborn Heights. But people in Dearborn Heights, a few people, say that they are concerned about maintaining some control in emergency dispatch operations and how having another community handle emergency calls for Dearborn Heights might affect response times. Well, I don't think they're sending crews from Dearborn to Dearborn Heights unless they're closer somehow, or unless the Dearborn Heights fire and police are tied up with something else. So, it just makes sense to have help from Dearborn. So I don't really know if any of those concerns are have any substance, to them. But nonetheless, it's good to talk it over and get some answers. In fact, 6 cities are part of the proposed plan, but not all have agreed to come on board. The other communities are Garden City, Inkster, Melvindale, Wayne, and Westland, along with Dearborn Heights and Dearborn, too. So that's an interesting proposal. And, I know when Dearborn Heights Fire Department merged with Melvindale, response times got better, and the state of Michigan, because the state of Michigan and our government, in their wisdom, they are actually giving like extra incentives, bonus money, grant money, to any communities that merge services for the sake of efficiency, nearby communities. And so perhaps this plan even would get some state money up front, even, that would help pay for certain things. Or I know Melvindale and Dearborn fire departments didn't have the same sort of radios or contact information, and so that was a pretty good thing to standardize that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to illuminate that a little bit, Jay. Recently, Melvindale, one of the representatives has said that because they don't have the current technology updates, et cetera, at the Melvindale police station, they're not so certain that they are ready to make this change. And a couple other cities are like that too. They just don't have the technical capacity to do what has to be done. And they're wondering whether it's, whether it's a economical thing to change as much as they've got to change in order to do the consolidation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Well, we'll see what happens. I just want to let you know that that's still an ongoing issue in Dearborn Heights, and for Dearborn too, and the other communities I mentioned, if they choose to come on board for that. Mayor O'Reilly here in Dearborn, he began discussing the possibility with folks about 2 years ago. So when it is more firmed up in terms of the actual contract, the agreement, then, of course, Mayor Poletko in Dearborn Heights said that public meetings will be held for residents right away to be discussed. Okay. I noticed also, it was a small article, but Ford Motor Company is going to buy 2 blocks in downtown Dearborn. And I was thinking, well, they've already announced they're going to do a $1.2 billion campus, as they call it, campus extension for themselves, not that they're creating Ford University or something. Certainly it wouldn't be like Trump University if they did, but which is not even a university. It's just sort of a little workshop or forum or a series of seminars that Trump had envisioned years ago. Well, let's not get into that sort of national stuff. But I'm thinking, why does Ford need 2 blocks in downtown Dearborn? And this is in west downtown Dearborn, by the way, folks. Well, certainly, probably got a pretty good price since there's a lot of empty buildings, a lot of vacancies, and some open space, too. I know there's a corner next to what formerly or still is a bank or something that's just an open field right on Michigan Avenue. They talk location is everything. And here they've got this huge area because other buildings have been removed, raised, as they say, R-A-Z-E-D, which means lowered to the ground. This is going to be the former site of the historic Wagner Hotel, and where a pair of restaurants were also, the original Lashish and Talal's on the south side of Michigan Avenue. I'm still trying to, in my head, I don't even remember, and I've been Dearborn resident since 79. That's 1979, thank you. But I don't remember where the historic Wagner Hotel was. I didn't know there was a hotel in West Dearborn on the street anywhere there. But anyway, that's where it's going to be located, and the specific plans have not been released about what Ford is going to put in. Redevelopment of the sites into office and retail space is expected. Will it be retail space for them? It sounds like it is. Or they're just going to be the landlord for other people coming in. It's not clear, but the City of Dearborn City Council adopted a resolution a couple weeks ago authorizing the sale, because I guess they own the property at this point. And well, thank you, Ford, for filling up some unused space there in West Dearborn. But you couldn't quite fit it in whatever you needed to do into your $1.2 billion campus expansion. Wow, I don't understand. They bought the, by the way, they bought that property for $200,000. Oh, the Wagner Hotel is formerly at the corner of Michigan and Monroe. Wow, I don't know when that was gone, though, because the Wagner Hotel was there for 120 years. Not when I was around, though, for the last 70 years. I don't know when it stopped being a hotel, but I just don't remember that at all. It's strange. They're blocked out there. But and they've also signed a lease, well, we knew this, I think I mentioned this before, for about 220,000 square feet of space in the former Lord & Taylor property. That's part of Fairlane Town Center, and they've already sort of built a wall connecting that part of the mall.
Yes.
And so I think they said it's going to be some sort of R&D for Ford there. So they're grabbing up space everywhere, and I guess if it's a good deal, it's fine. And, of course, all these facilities these days can be interconnected with computers and communication systems. And, so it they don't have to be all in the same place necessarily to know what each other is doing actively. Video conferencing, oh, my gosh. So I get, as long as it's a good deal, too bad for Fairlane Town Center that they lose some merchants because the R&D people there aren't going to attract more people to come to Fairlane Mall to shop. There's just going to be fewer shops. Oh, well. Okay, so that's some of the catch-up news. Don't have any mustard news today. But.
I'm sure we'll find a way to relish that joke.
Oh, yeah. We do that joke so many times, but I love it. It's about 10 minutes after the hour, and we're waiting for the arrival of our scheduled guest, one of the candidates for 15th District Michigan Representative. I'll mention his name later. It's on our website. I gave him a big billboard, and you can draw in whatever conclusions that you want to if he doesn't show up. But we have booked almost all the other Fridays with a 30-minute interview of either a candidate for, again, the 15th District Michigan Representative slot that's on the ballot in August 2nd primary election. And also the three candidates have been contacted for the 19th District District Judge primary election. And, in fact, let me give you a quick rundown here just to let you know how exciting this is going to be. Next week, we'll have a Republican from running for the 15th District primary election. He's got two other Republicans that are running also for your vote, if you want to vote Republican during that primary election for these candidates. Paul Sophia, that's how he pronounces it, S-O-P-H-I-E-A. Is going to be here on the Journal for a 30-minute interview. Week after that, going back to the 19th District Court candidates, we've already interviewed Gene Hunt, who's on the ballot, and we talked to him on the 27th. If you want to catch up on that interview, you can, again, all of our shows are archived and available for a podcast from our website, whfr.fm. Click on Talk Shows, click on WHFR Journal, and select the date. So Gene Hunt, it was May 27th, our last show in May. Yeah, we had a great conversation with him at that time. The other candidate, as I said, coming up on the 24th of this month, 24th of June, Abby Bazzi is running for the 19th District Judgeship. And so we'll be interviewing her on the 24th for 30 minutes. We're trying to be fair to all the candidates here. In July, we have the July 1st and July 8th open. We're still trying to contact a few more candidates. We've sent out to everybody that we have an address or a phone number for, and we're having some trouble getting in contact with some of the candidates. But we have only two slots left, so if any candidates are listening or anyone who's a supporter of other candidates, let me know. I have scheduled in July on the 15th, Brian Stone, who's running for the Democratic primary, 15th District Michigan Representative. The 15th of July, we'll be doing our show live at Dearborn Farmers Market and Farmers and Artisans Market. Yes, I'll get it out. And that's at the Bryan Public Library, and we'll be outdoors doing it live that day, weather permitting, of course. Otherwise, Brian Stone will be interviewed here in the studio. On the 22nd, also a Democrat running for 15th District, Michigan, 22nd of July now, Roxanne McDonald. Roxanne McDonald will be here. Roxanne is, of course, already our Board of Trustees member here at Henry Ford College. And on the 29th of July, the last show we have before the August 2nd election, Abdullah Hamoud, who just came by my house, or at least his representatives did. They left one of those flyers in the door, hanging from the doorknob. I guess they're called hangers or whatever. I missed him, but we'll see him here, and he'll have a 30-minute interview on July 29th. I just saw on the League of Women Voters website, in fact, and I need to go to that right now live here at WHFR. So, of course, all of you can go there. It's your source of information about elections and votes. LWVDDH.org, League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. And on their website, besides mentioning their annual meeting, which is a buffet, but also features Michigan Supreme Court Justice Richard Bernstein is going to speak, but it's a fundraiser too. It's $40 for a non-member, $30 for a member. And that's going to be on June 22nd at Park Place in Dearborn. Again, go to their website for information about that. Dearborn Candidate Forum is coming up, which will feature a lot of these same candidates that we're talking to, but I'm sure they'll only be able to get, since there's so many of them, 3 to 5 minutes of comments from each of them, even if you're there for the whole time. And that's why we're doing these additional. And I'm sure we won't be asking exactly the same questions anyway. I just saw this. It is going to be Tuesday, July 11th. Okay. And, whoops, all of a sudden the page went all the way to the bottom. What did I touch here? Okay, here it is. Tuesday, July 11th, July 12th, okay. And the Dearborn Candidate Forum, because you probably want to go to it in person if you can. It's at the City Council Chambers, the Dearborn Administrative Center, that is the new City Hall, Michigan Avenue, West Dearborn, or middle of Dearborn there. It's going to start at 6 o'clock and go to 9 p.m. that night. So I hope to be there in person. And also, they do say that, is it going to be videotaped? Yes, it's going to be taped by the City of Dearborn Television and then streamed on the city's website, cityofdearborn.org. So if you miss that public forum with these candidates, you can catch it that way. From 6 to 6:30, they're going to talk about ballot proposals. And I was just at the League of Women Voters website. And what did I do with that? Yes. Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is late breaking, folks. We told you it was coming, though, on this show. We told you that because of the budget that was being submitted by Mayor O'Reilly and is still under consideration by Dearborn City Hall, that they're going to have to do something to raise money, either this year or next year. And Mayor O'Reilly was advocating that we look at a different way of funding the cities, something that isn't dependent totally on property taxes. But by the end of this year, the supplemental millage is of temporary supplemental millage, a 3.5 mils that was approved in 2011, is going to expire. And as it says here, this ballot proposal will be on the ballot August 2nd. I haven't read this story anywhere in any papers. And we were the first ones to suggest by our conversation with Mayor O'Reilly and our close reading the ballot proposal that they're going to have to do something. As the proposal itself says, if this 3.5 mil temporary supplemental millage is not renewed, the city's revenues will fall approximately $11,123,000-something beginning in July 2017 and each year after, resulting in obvious service reductions of one sort or the other, they don't say. Renewing it temporarily maintains the same tax rate limitation that's currently in place. And again, it would be a five-year extension, just like the last one was, for 5 years, 2011 to 2016. So $11,120,000+ every year in debt. Big budget cut there. Why? Because even though home values have gone up, we're not paying higher taxes in Dearborn, just a little bit more. Not everything that our property values would indicate would be our fair share. But that's because of the Headley Amendment that was passed back in the 90s for the state of Michigan. So that won't catch up until, I think Mayor O'Reilly said, 2028 or something. I mean, it's quite a ways for the increments to catch up to even the property values, whatever they are today. So that we can't wait for that, folks, if we want to keep Dearborn on an even keel here and keep the services intact. But this is going to be on the August 2nd ballot. Oh, my gosh. OMG. If I was texting. And so there's going to be a discussion of ballot proposals at 6 p.m. on Tuesday night, July 12th, and it'll be taped, and it'll be on Dearborn Cable TV somewhere, or you can get it from the cityofdearborn.org website. Just stream it directly from that on your computer that I hope you have. And we'll talk about it, certainly, but it's interesting. It says 6 p.m. ballot proposals with an S. I only saw one on the League of Women Voters website. I just found this like 2 minutes before the show started today, and was extremely surprised, because for this to be on the ballot, it had to be passed by the Dearborn City Council to put it on the ballot.
Sure. Yep.
John is nodding.
That's true.
He's in awe too, and that was never reported by any local paper. I mean, I read these papers: Dearborn Times Herald, Dearborn Press and Guide, the Arab American News. I never read that was passed, and here it is going to be on the ballot. But that's because most of the papers do not have a regular news reporter sitting there at the council meetings, because it is terribly boring most of the time. But this is not boring information. I mean, again, we broke the news that they're going to have it. Mayor O'Reilly, they're going to have something to make up for the loss of money. Mayor O'Reilly was suggesting to us that maybe they'd consider something other than a renewal. And maybe they will if this fails. They'll have to find something else. Or they have a little time. All right, they could go back to the voters again before July 2017. They still have about an extra 6 months or extra year, August to whatever. I don't know. I don't know what, you know, once it passes, when does the new millage start? In January 2017, so it'd still be 3-4 months before it would kick in. Mm-hmm. And maybe it has to start with the calendar year or something. So if they don't improve it this time, maybe that means we'll lose the $11.1 million until we pass something in 2017 that starts in January of 2018. Mm. Boy. So, I mean, it's a big issue. Okay, and I'm glad we got a few minutes to talk here. Our guest for today, who was scheduled, Democratic candidate for 15th District Michigan Representative, Norman Alsahuri, is not arrived yet. We hope he can, and we hope he can get his full 30 minutes in. We've still got a few minutes before half past. Okay, anyway, moving on. So that candidate forum is very important, and we'll keep reminding you again, 6 p.m. at the new City Hall in Dearborn on July the 12th, so a month away. They'll talk about the proposals. They'll give from 6:30 to 7:30. They'll give time to ask some questions to the 19th District Court judges, people trying to be the judge, and the candidates at 7:30 until 9 o'clock. But there's either 8 or 9 candidates if they all show up. Some candidates just don't show up for these things, right, John? Yes. Or like our interviews. But, you know, stuff happens. I mean, hey, we're all human, right? But, you know, if you're a candidate for elected office and you make a promise, you people kind of expect you to keep that promise. I'm not saying anything about our guest for today. Again, stuff happens and so on. But other people might have second thoughts about supporting someone who didn't show up. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Nothing negative. Stuff happens, as I said. Hopefully there's still time for Narman Alessori to get here today and be on the air with us for his full 30 minutes. So they're going to give 90 minutes for 8 or 10. So about 10 minutes each they'll be able to squeeze everybody in if everybody shows up. In that hour, each of those judicial candidates will get about 20 minutes each, but not as long as what we give them here. Oh, boy. So we're happy to do that. That's one of the reasons that we do this show, give you more information and background. Okay, some other stories here happening. We always got lots of stories. Okay. Let me do the one, John, about the Detroit Public Schools. I'm sure you've, if you follow the news, and you say, well, why do you talk about Detroit? I thought you talked about Dearborn. Well, Detroit is right next door to us, of course. And how the schools go in Detroit might also be a foreshadowing of school problems elsewhere. Well, Dearborn schools are nothing like Detroit schools. Well, no, because they've been out of money for, what, 5 years or five financial managers from the state of Michigan? And what great financial managers they were, right? I mean, five of them, and they still can't straighten it out. Although some of them did advocate things that were never passed by the legislature. Well, the legislature, as you probably know if you watch any of the major news TV shows or listen to the radio, they did pass a bill. Not as much as what was asked for. So here's a story from this week's Metro Times, current from yesterday. A little over a year ago, talks about legislation to save Detroit Public Schools from the insane debt accrued under state control began. Late Wednesday night, the conversation came to an end as the Michigan Senate passed the House's package of Detroit Public Schools-related bills. The legislation, which includes a $617 million loan, it's a loan, folks, it's a loan to pay off the debt. So what does that effectively mean? Think about this. They're back in debt again because they still got the $617 million debt. But it's a loan to pay off the debt. So they still have a $617 million debt. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, government of state of Michigan. And I say, it boggles my mind because this was all incurred because of, I would say, the incompetency of five emergency financial managers appointed by Governor Snyder. That they couldn't straighten things out. They couldn't get any request through that did any good. And it's now in more trouble than ever. And you say, well, $617 million loan, that should help, though. No, because most experts who know education and look at the city say they needed about $750 million. Originally, the House only passed about $500 million. And this bill was like a compromise between the two, $617 million is like halfway in between. Wow, what a compromise. Jeez, halfway in between. Let's split the difference. Yeah, it's not as terribly little as before, but it is less than what everybody needs. Sure, let's go with that. I'm sorry. All opinions on this show are
they're not necessarily the views of WHFR or Henry Ford College, and they're just those views that are expressed by the hosts.
Yeah, or the guests, or the stuff we read.
Or the people we have on the air.
Yeah, it's true. The Metro Times article, which I've gone on a tangent from here, but they were upset, so they have sort of a bias against this too. They say, given the critiques that the House bills got last week, draconian policies against teachers, limited funding, and a deference towards charter schools, the bills were seen as a hard sell. As the Detroit Free Press notes, Republican leaders in the Senate, House, and Snyder met behind closed doors for backroom negotiations before the main Detroit education bill in the Senate Wednesday night passed 19-18 by one vote. Our local representative, State Senator Morris Hood, and his area does connect part of Dearborn's territory here, Detroiter Democrat, he says, I'm quoting him. This is news. He says, "You damn cowards," talking to the legislature, "to even take up this legislation before us in our community and not even have one Detroiter in the room to help negotiate this. These are kids I have to look at every day, but you want to make decisions about their life and tell them what kind of life they're going to have? This is the..." Okay, he said another word here that I can't say over the radio, even if it's news. "This is the sort of thing you're shoving down their throats. This is going to impact them for years." Some notable, and the story goes on, some notable components of the past legislation include a newly elected school board. The current school board is barred from running. Thank you, legislature, for telling us who can run and who can't. An appointed financial oversight committee reviewing all spending of the school board. It's like emergency manager 2.0, suggests the Metro Times. Penalties for striking teachers. The allowance of non-certified individuals to teach in Detroit, and only in Detroit. Because they don't need real teachers in Detroit, right? They don't need teachers that are certified, that have any credentials. No, they're only, it's only Detroit. So get anybody. Anybody that anybody thinks, or the emergency manager thinks, can keep a classroom from going into chaos or something. I mean, that is the craziest thing I as a teacher have ever heard. And, of course, they only will allow that in Detroit. What, to save money? You're going to get some people out of McDonald's instead of their minimum wage with burgers? They're going to sling textbooks or something, hot, juicy textbooks to the classes? I'm getting surreal here, but I can't believe this bill that was passed. I mean, I can't believe how crazy it is. And, also, merit-based pay for new teachers, because now it's not seniority. It used to be if you were there for 3 to 5 years or whatever, and then each year after that, you get a slight increase automatically, just a slight increase. I used to refer to that as battle fatigue pay, a reason to stay alive and to try to cure yourself and come back strong after a month off in the summer. But now new teachers will not have any pay increases that are automatic. Seniority increases, as they're called. It's only if they have some sort of a proof, as decided by their principals, okay, the people running the administration, that's running the school, that they have done a good job or have achieved their goals. But that hasn't been decided how that's going to happen exactly. There's different systems in every district. And that's, I think, as a teacher, that's pretty crazy, too. Legislation also lacks the controversial Detroit Education Commission, a coalition that would oversee the opening and closing of schools in the city. The controversial group earned the ire of charter school advocates who believed the board, which had been appointed by Mayor Mike Duggan, which would have been, would be too politicized and ultimately hinder charter school growth. Yeah, they want the right to open a charter school right across from a public school or something, thereby using their busing system to get the kids in their charter school, where really the school should be spread out and cover where all the students are. I mean, Detroit is a large area, and there's people that live all around, and so none of them should have to go too far to school. And so if a public school is not there for whatever reason, then that would be a good location for a charter school. But no, that Detroit Education Commission, which would be controlled by and would oversee the opening and closing of schools, that was X'd out by the legislature. I guess Duggan is a Democrat or something. I think he is. I mean, he ran as nonpartisan in Detroit. I don't think that was a partisan race in Detroit, but nonetheless, I think everybody knows that he's a Democrat, and I think he is. But anyway, they don't like him, I guess, because they don't like his politics. They don't want to give him the control. Because the legislature in Lansing, now they know how to run schools in Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't even come from Detroit, except two or three of them, and those two or three are Democrats, and they didn't have anything to say in this anyway. But all the others, Republicans from outstate, they know how to run schools in Detroit. Oh, yeah, they do. No, they don't, obviously. That's my opinion, and I'm not very humbly saying that they don't know anything about it, but they don't. Most of them are not educators. They have no background in administrating schools, and this is what they've done. So the article concludes here, and we're going to take a break. Let's see. There's a quote here. I want to get the person. Is it Mayor Duggan? Okay, let's see here. Quote, maybe it's Duggan. This is a new Detroit public school district. The debt will be gone. The emergency managers will no longer be needed. Local control will be restored so that new leaders for the district can be chosen this fall by Detroit voters. That's what the Mayor Duggan said in a statement. Still, those from Detroit, like Senator Hood and many of the state's Democrats, remain unconvinced. That's Snyder. Okay, that's what Snyder said, all those positive things. The debt will be gone. Well, unless this article was written incorrectly, it said that $650 million is a loan. So the way I see it, the immediate debt is gone, but now there's a new debtor, and it's the state of Michigan. I mean, I don't know who the other debts were paid to or had to be paid to, but I thought, too, it was just going to be a $617 million grant. Yes, the state's got the money because they're not spending it on roads, so give the money to the schools, pay off the loan, that the debt that your administrators incurred over the last 5 years. I'm sorry, that's the way I see it. Okay, so is that a loan or is that a grant? It says here in the article it was a loan. So how can Snyder say the debt will be gone? How can he say that? Okay, here's David Kinesic, our senator from Dearborn Heights. He says, why is it okay to subject Detroit's children to an unequal, unproven model of education? This is not about educating the children of Detroit, but you're so desperate and catering to lawmakers in the House who are more worried about keeping their jobs in November than educating the children of Detroit. This arrangement is little more than a stay of execution for the Detroit Public School District. He also went on to say, I know it was quoted in another article, that he was ashamed as a Wednesday of being a legislator and what he was part of. He voted against it, but he was part of that. Okay, that's very sad that people who don't know what they're doing and are not directly in contact with the real world are in control of this issue. That's just very sad. John's going to make a comment, and we're going to take a break here. Oh, by the way, Senator Kinesic, although I don't believe he's running for office this year, but he's going to be a guest on our show when we're also that hour live on July 15th from the Dearborn Farmers and Artists Market. So we'll get to talk more to him then. We'll see if he's still ashamed of being legislature then. Very good. John?
Yeah. Jay, you mentioned before about the teachers' pay going up as a merit increase.
New teachers only if they're hired in. It's not going to be any automatic seniority bonus or increases each year.
And that's what I was asking you about. The seniority has always been the rule.
Yes.
For so much, and tenure, I guess, is also another term for that.
There is no tenure now anymore.
No more tenure. No. But you worked for a certain number of years, so you could not only achieve a certain level of income, but a certain level of security.
Yes.
And I know that's what is figured into retirement plans as well for teachers.
Yep.
So how is that? How will that be affected as far as teachers retiring now? You know.
Well, they can only get additional monies by merit pay, which means their administrators, by one kind of subjective call or the other, say you're doing a good job and you deserve a little extra money.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what it takes. Does it take working 60 or 80 hours a week? Do you have to come in and plant flowers around the school, too, to show you're a great employee? I mean, what does it take? Most teachers that I know, they work a lot more than 40 hours a week. They put in about 60 hours a week or more. That's actually at the school building, too, and assist, you know, after-hour parent-teacher conferences and coaching. And sometimes you get extra pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And so it's just a sad state of affairs, and that's one of the big questions we'll be asking these candidates when they come on the show is what are they going to do, especially if they're not in the majority party?
Yeah.
What can they do? They can just get elected and then be ashamed, I guess, as David Kinesic said. Okay, here's a couple comments, one from Jim Hightower, and it's his opinion, and these are very good comments, by the way, always very good, Jim Hightower and Jack Lessenberry back-to-back here. The first one is about bringing back Bill Clinton, and Lessenberry comments about Hillary Clinton, how he says she won fair and square. However, okay, so listen to these. We'll be back with more news and alternative views on the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm, station making waves.
This year, despite the unnerving presidential freak show the Republicans are putting on, Hillary Clinton is the one who recently sent the coldest chills down my spine. Attempting to convince wary working-class families that she will stand against the abuses of her Wall Street financial backers while also lifting up the poor and shoring up the middle class, Clinton made this horrifying declaration. She'll bring back Bill. Specifically, Hillary promises that her former president husband will be put in charge of, quote, revitalizing the economy. Good grief! Isn't he the big galoot who turned his economic policy over to Wall Street's Machiavellian, Robert Rubin? Yes. And didn't Bill break his 1992 campaign promise to raise the minimum wage in his first year, putting it off until his fourth year? And even then, providing only a token increase that still left the working poor mired in poverty? Yes, again. And didn't he push into law a welfare reform bill that has shredded the safety net for America's poorest, most vulnerable people? Afraid so. Moreover, wasn't it Bill who literally rammed NAFTA down our throats, creating that job-sucking sound that continues to devastate today's middle class? Yep, he's the one. And didn't he also collude with laissez-faire ideologues and plutocratic Republicans to deregulate Wall Street so global speculators could wreck our economy by playing casino games with our bank deposits and home mortgages? Yes, him again. This is Jim Hightower saying, by the way, since leaving office, Bill has amassed a personal fortune through smarmy, often secret deals with Wall Street banks and global corporations. Why would Hillary threaten workaday Americans with another poke in the eye from this big-money con man? Instead, she should use Bill's gift of gab by making him her official, quote, Walmart greeter for White House visitors.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
WHFR Journal in progress. Thank you to Jim Hightower and Jack Lessenberry for recording those spots. Thank you to Michigan Public Radio for allowing us to use Jack Lessenberry's spots. You can listen to those yourself anytime you want to, but we put it in our show so you don't have to click on other websites and you might forget each week. So we include those as much as we can. Okay. So, here's more stories. John's got a story about something that only the federal government could do to help us in this area.
Yes, Jay, this is a $7 million was awarded for Lower Detroit River habitat restoration projects. This award is going to Friends of the Detroit River to help complete more acreage of habitat restoration than any previous restoration effort for what is referred to as the Detroit River Area of Concern. And its habitats on islands in the Lower Detroit River will go to the Detroit River Stony Island Habitat Restoration Project. This is all part of the Downriver International Refuge. And in addition to this funding, the Senators Stabenow and Gary Peters announced $2.3 million in funding this past February to restore fish and wildlife habitats. I applaud this investment in habitat restoration for the Detroit River, which will result in major positive recreational and economic impacts for Michiganders. This is from Gary Peters. Mm-hmm. Commitment to the preservation of our waterways will restore the health and beauty of this critical ecosystem while creating jobs and promoting our state's growing tourism industry.
That seems like a good idea. You know, on this show, you might say, oh, you're very liberal or you're... Yeah, well, yeah, sometimes, well, many times I come down on the side of liberal causes or support the local Democrats because they're our representatives and they know us best right now, whether the Democrats or not, and I'm usually in favor of what they're recommending because I think they're recommending good things because they know best what this local area needs. But nonetheless, I just wanted to say that I try to stay independent, as does John, and be fair. And there are some things. So if you're talking about liberal conservative, there are some things that the federal government only can do best. Some people say, well, federal government can never do anything good. Yeah, well, there's Social Security. Well, it's running out of money. Well, some people are not paying their fair share. It is absolutely true. Rich people, because of tax abatements, and the fact that the withholding and withdrawal of money is capped after about $120,000 a year of salary. So they're not paying on the percentage on their full pay above that. Unbelievable. And if you would just do that, if you would just have everybody pay their fair share, I think Bernie Sanders said this, we're not talking about taxing the rich more even. We're just saying we will save Social Security forever if we just let the cap go and everybody pays on their income their tax. And if, you know, and certainly tax discounts, abatements, exemptions that apply only to the rich. Well, trickle-down theory doesn't work. It doesn't work. I don't care what you think. You know, I don't care how many times you hear it. It's wrong. There is no evidence that if the rich are able to keep more of their money, they're going to spend it to give the poor jobs. They don't do that. It's not proven. It's been spoken for 40 years. But even the first George Bush, President George Bush, said after a year in office, it's voodoo economics. No, when he was campaigning for office, said it's voodoo economics. Voodoo economics. In other words, it doesn't work. Actually, voodoo might work. But I don't know. But I'm just saying that he was using that metaphor to imply that it's completely unbiased, spooky logic, and it doesn't work. And so I'm just saying Social Security, the U.S. postal system, if it wasn't held under a leash by our federal government, that is the Republicans who constantly vote to cut its funding, even public television funding constantly being cut there. Our only objective source of news is what we get from public television and national public radio, and of course this show, an independent radio station. So there are some things that the federal government does best. That's my belief. It's my opinion. Okay. But there's an awful lot of things that could be done locally. And that's why this show is here, to talk about what can we do locally and what can we do in the state of Michigan that we don't need the federal government for. And there's so much that can be done in that way, too. And yet we usually let somebody else do it. And the federal government tries to do it, and then they get stuck. By the way, you said, well, what about Obamacare, Koronik? Okay, I've got to talk about this. I was never in favor of it because it didn't go far enough. I knew this would happen because the young people don't think they have to pay, even though they're going to have to pay some sort of fine on their taxes if they're not insured under some plan for Medicare. This is not Medicare, Medicaid.
Medicaid, yep.
Right.
Yep.
So Medicare is different. Medicare takes care of everything. There's still some extra costs that are kind of weird, and most people, if they want complete coverage, have to buy a gap insurance.
Definitely.
John knows about this too, Medicare, as I do. Yeah. Yeah. So Medicare is not a free ride for all medical costs and prescriptions after you get of that age. Was it 62? I think it starts.
62, but it also comes into play if you had any kind of Social Security disability. You
know, right. So, yeah. Right. But so, yeah, of course, Obamacare, if you want to call it that, it's Affordable Care Act. It did a lot of good things. There's a lot of reforms that went on. And a lot of people have coverage that didn't have coverage before, but the costs are going up, and that's because the younger people are just going to pay the fine instead of getting a health insurance policy that, because they're healthy already, they don't think they need. Although, of course, ill health can happen at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So, to anybody. But the odds are lower that that's going to happen, and so they're just going to risk it and pay the fine, whatever it is. It's going to be less than a... So, because they're not getting everybody to buy in, then that health insurance is going to be more and more expensive for people. So universal single payer for everybody, or Medicare at least for all, even if there's some extra costs for prescription drug plans or whatever, that would take care of all this extra cost and all the rigmarole and all the state buy-ins and support And voucher plan, oh my God, it's too complicated. It doesn't need to be. America has not the best, but maybe only the 7th or 10th best healthcare plan in the world by all people that study that. And we cost the most. The plan costs the most.
Jay, I just wanted to add one more quote from Robert Burns, who serves as the riverkeeper for the Friends of the Detroit River. He said the project and the $4.8 million that was just received is going to entail the reconstruction of a series of shoals that once ran along the western and southern sides of the island, and they're talking about Stony Island restoration, and protected its wetlands from the effects of rivers, waves, ice, and current impacts. Over the years, with high water and strong currents, much of these shoals have been eroded away. With this funding, these shoals will be rebuilt, which over time will allow the wetlands to reestablish themselves. And Robert Burns, there have been many fundraisers and also notoriety for him in establishing his his position as riverkeeper. And
he was a great poet, too.
Robert Burns.
No, that was different. That was
he's a little bit older,
hundreds of years ago in Ireland or somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Scotland, whatever. I'm sorry. Somebody gave me a book, a collection of Robert Burns poems, and it was sweet. It was very sweet.
All right.
Yeah, it was one of those women that dumped me in the past, going away present.
What a wrong person that was.
Yeah, so I never read Robert Burns after that. But anyway, no, speaking of the river, and here's a story about Windsor. Ah, Windsor, are you listening? Yes, we talk about you. The definitive story from... And this is crazy. I got this story from the Coast to Coast AM website. Are you familiar with Coast to Coast AM, John?
I am not, Jay.
The radio show? Okay, it's been on for years and years.
Okay.
And it's syndicated around the country. It is, I think, from midnight to 5 a.m. on whatever stations carry it. And it's George Norrie, who actually grew up in Dearborn.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. He took over the show from a previous former very famous host whose name escapes me now. And he's been the host for 4 or 5 years, I guess. But they talk about the paranormal, alien abductions, ghosts, all of that. Okay. So one of the stories that they've done for the last 6 years on and off is about the hum. The audible hum that is maddening. It's a maddening humming sound that comes across the river to Windsor, Ontario. And it's been called the Windsor Hum. And it seemingly came out of nowhere in 2010 when denizens of the city, as the story says, began reporting a low rumbling sound that varied in intensity and could last for days on end. Not just like an airplane going over, you know, once and passing and be gone. When the sound really picks up, they say, it can even rattle walls and windows with an intense vibration. Windsor resident Mike Provost told their newspaper, The Guardian, if you think of thunder and you take that thunder and constantly repeat it for hours and days, weeks, that's all of it. The torment has proved to be so bad for some citizens of Windsor that they've been forced to rely on sleeping pills in order to get any rest. You would think the vibrations would still bother them, you know, unless they're really unconscious. Others have been prescribed anxiety medication, not only for themselves, but also for their pets who are suffering from the sound as well. There was a, on the Coast to Coast AM website, there was a video clip here, which was, I think it's from the Channel 9 TV station. They did a story about that, and they showed the pets, the poor pets that are suffering. You would think that would get government action. Well, to sum up quickly here, as quickly as I can, attempts to solve the mystery of the hum via a Canadian government study pointed the finger at an American site known as Zug Island. And John has been there. You took a tour of beautiful Zug Island.
Beautiful Zug Island.
Were you thinking of buying property there? Or? No. Nobody lives there. It's all a steel plant.
Yeah. It's all muddy and intellectual curiosity got the best
of me. So it's in the Detroit River. It's sort of a border between two countries, but it's technically administered and owned by the United States. Anyway, incredibly, researchers believe that they've pinpointed now the ultimate source of the sound to be from a blast furnace inside a steel plant. And by the way, if you didn't know this, I didn't know this, Zug Island is a man-made island.
Yes.
It was sort of dredged up, or maybe it was a little island, and they just sort of dug out a little more of the river and made it bigger or more solid or something. But a man-made island. However, their findings only serve to make the problem even more frustrating because while they may have found the origin of the hum, stopping it has proved to be a futile task. American government officials, does that include people in Michigan? Because it must be Michigan property, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not just U.S. property. Nope. Although there are some places in the world where it's a U.S. territory, you know, and it's not a state, like out in the Pacific. Isn't Guam a U.S. territory or something?
Right.
And but I don't think Zug Island is a U.S. territory. Well, I mean, who's the representative? Who's our local state senator that's got Zug Island?
Responsible for Zug Island.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, I'm just asking that on behalf of the people of Windsor. Because anyway, there's a little concern here with the American administrators because it's not an issue for people in the U.S. For some reason, it only vibrates east or northeast or southeast or whatever it is from Zug Island to Windsor. In fact, I would think it would be kind of northeast. I know Zug Island is a little bit, it's across from what? It's north of Wyandotte in the river.
Yeah, it's Del Rey.
Yeah, you know. But most of Windsor goes even to the east side of Detroit, so I'm not sure if it's hit equally. So it seems to be sort of east-northeast, at least, from Zug Island up to Windsor, I mean, at least the coastline. Yeah, John's trying to think of his...
Amherstburg, I mean, is not too far from that area, too, but...
I think it's south of, across from Windsor. I don't think it's directly across. Well, anyway, let's pass. So just finish it up here. Windsor residents have found themselves unwitting victims of a bureaucratic mess that may not be solved unless the highest reaches of the Canadian government. Justin Trudeau, come on over. Get an interview on the Journal here. We'll take care of you. Anyway, the highest reaches of Canadian government must push for some kind of solution directly to the U.S. government, I guess. Until then, the people of Windsor are forced to live with the hum that's become an omnipresent part of their lives and wistfully wish for a day when they can once again enjoy the sweet sound of silence. Wow. Well, it won't be silent, but in 5 minutes, you'll love it. It's going to be the Highway 61 show with Kitty Love, the best in the blues. She's in the studio. Oh, my goodness. She's got the CDs. She's got the music. She's got information for you from 2 o'clock until 4 o'clock this afternoon. At 4 o'clock, by the way, Mike Holloway comes in with more blues, the best in the blues that he chooses, and it's all great, from 4 o'clock to 6 p.m. Go with the flow, Mike Holloway show. Okay. Have anything else, John? There's some free concerts in Dearborn tonight.
Yeah.
Starting tonight. I just got a copy of the City of Dearborn e-newsletter, and you can get that yourself for free if you have an email account. Just go to citydearborn.org and find the link and click on it and put in your address there. You'll get it right away. So and of course, these stories do appear, they're really just city press releases that they sort of push together in this e-newsletter. So if you read the local papers, even though they're delayed from later than the e-newsletter, but you can also get the information. So what about those free concerts?
Well, we have concerts will run from 5 to 9, the first and third Fridays in June, July, and August, featuring bands like the Reefer Men on June 24th, July 8th, Jody Raffoul, which is rock, classic rock, the Mugs on July 22nd.
Oh, the Mugs, yeah. We've had them here at WHFR.
The Mugs, yeah. Mm-hmm. And on into August, where we have the Renfields, Rock Alternative Country. And these concerts are held from 7 to 9, rain or shine, at historic City Hall Park, which is the old City Hall area at Michigan Avenue.
Michigan and Schaefer, yep.
Yep. And we have and also food truck rallies will be taking place. We always got to talk about food, Jay.
That's the West Dearborn location, isn't it?
Well, that is, yeah. That is the West Dearborn location.
Yes.
That's true.
Right.
Yep.
And when are the food trucks going to be there?
They will be there at the same time as the concerts.
I think it's earlier. Starts a little earlier, though. He's looking for the time.
It doesn't say what time. It says, no, I don't see what time it is, Jay. But
okay. Well, we'll get the finalized. But I'm not sure they're going to be there starting tonight. But tonight is that first concert.
Right.
Bryant Public Library is the area. There's a sort of a patio between the Bryant Library and Buddy's Pizza. And
singer-songwriter Pat Brennan kicks off the show tonight.
Okay.
From 5 to 9.
Great. Okay. 2 minutes. We usually try to end with either news. By the way, I know that Melvindale, beautiful Melvindale, is having a Spirit Fest this weekend. So I just saw that somewhere. So okay. If you live down Melvindale way, I think it started yesterday, and it's going to go all the way through the 12th, this Sunday. So check on your schedules. But they're going to have the usual carnival and the food and that kind of stuff. Right. But what I found, and this is in the Press and Guide every now and then, but they bury it usually in the back, but it's on the website right now. It is a list of different bills actually passed by the House and the Senate. But it's not the major ones you hear. It's all the minor ones, the little ones. And here's one that just passed in the Senate, and it'll probably be a law. It's to authorize school districts to have a millage proposal on the ballot for one mill, and it would go into paying for swimming pools, recreation centers, public auditoriums, public conference centers, and parks. However, the law is silent on whether the recreational facilities built by the schools could be school facilities if the bill becomes law, but does require them to be open to the public. David Kinesic voted yes on that, as did all the other senators from our area. What's interesting is one that did not pass. George Duraney voted no. Reduce points for barely speeding. It passed by large margins in the House, but this bill, which I don't think passed the Senate yet, it's to reduce the driver's license points imposed for exceeding the speed limits by 5 miles an hour or less to 1 point. It used to be 2 points. But from 6 miles an hour to 10 miles an hour, it would go back up to 2 points. And I know it's more points than that if it's more than 10 miles an hour. But interestingly, he voted no on that. I guess he felt if people understood that, they would all go at least 5 miles an hour over, you know. Now, they've also changed, and this was a House bill change, they changed the speed limits. Rural freeways, the limit will go up to 75, although I think most people go 75 or 80 anyway. John does, yeah, I know. That is where engineering studies and traffic patterns indicate this is safe. General speed limits also would be 70 miles an hour on other freeways, like probably Southfield Expressway, where most people go 75 or 80. 65 miles an hour on state trunk line highways with light traffic, 55 on country roads, and 55 miles an hour on unpaved roads. Wow, they must have an SUV. 55 miles an hour on unpaved road. Whoa, my gosh, look out for the stones flying on that one. Except in Oakland and Wayne counties, where they would be 45 miles an hour. The speed limit on subdivision streets would remain at 25 miles an hour. Well, Duraney voted no on that. It just... wonder. Of course, he's unfortunately can be called a lame duck now, so he can do whatever he wants to, whatever he thinks is best. And
whatever suits his fancy.
But it's interesting that all the other area representatives, well, except the speed limit thing, Plawecki, who is still representing Dearborn Heights, he voted no on that, changing the speed limits too. You know, it is. I have to tell you that it's definitely true. Even though you might say, well, if the speeds go up, it's going to be all the accidents are going to be worse, and so more people are going to get injured or hurt worse.